I would agree. I think that leading is less about telling people what to do and making them worry about what happens if they don't do it, and more showing them what needs to be done to get to an outcome or a goal, and helping them figure out how together you can get there.
Welcome to the ADHD Essentials Podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Mahan. I'm an ADHD professional who has been working in the field for 10 years. I'm on the organizing committee for the International Conference on ADHD and a board member of the Men's ADHD Support Group. Registration for the Spring 2024 session of the ADHD Essentials Parenting Groups is now open. This round begins May 20th. We'll meet for 1 hour twice a week on Mondays and Wednesdays over the course of 8 weeks total. One section is at 12 p.m. Eastern and the other is at 5 p.m. Eastern. The 12 p.m. Eastern section is exclusive to parents of teens, but the 5 p.m. Eastern section is open to everyone. These groups were built to improve the cooperation and relationship between you and your kid. We'll do that with ADHD-friendly strategies that improve communication, support independence, and reduce the overall anxiety at home. Over the past 5 years, I have helped hundreds of parents address the challenges they face as a result of ADHD and anxiety. I'm sure I can help you too. In the spirit of today's episode, let's help you become more of a leader and less of a boss when it comes to your kids. Welcome to the show. Today, Tali Dolge and Amanda Morin join me on the pod. Tali is a national mental health strategic advisor and executive consultant, and the founder and CEO of Mindful Workplace, LLC. Amanda is a neurodivergent neurodiversity activist, an award-winning author, certified educator, and nationally known speaker. Tali and Amanda have recently launched the Empathic Edge podcast, where they have intimate conversations with inspiring leaders with the aim of shattering preconceived ideas and providing actionable items to help listeners understand and work with the different personalities and ideas in this ever-changing work environment. In this episode, Tali, Amanda, and I talk about leadership both in the workplace and at home. We discuss the difference between bosses and leaders, why leadership is more of an art than a science, the interplay between leadership and professionalism, the importance of trust in the workplace, and how the workplace is changing. All right, let's get rolling.
Hi, I'm Tali Dolge. I am a national strategic mental health and leadership consultant and speaker and advocate for mental health and wellness.
And I'm Amanda Morin. I am a former educator, parent advocate, author of a number of books, and been here before talking to you, Brendan. I never know how to introduce myself. So
no, you're good. You're good. So we're going to talk about leadership, and we're going to talk about leadership for a couple of reasons that directly connect to this podcast. One is that the podcast is shifting a little bit, so it's not exclusively parenting. It's now kind of adults in general. Two, leadership and parenting are the same thing. So anything we say about leadership is going to apply to parenting, unless it's really specifically about the workplace or something. And even then, it's probably still useful and you can probably make it apply to parenting anyway. That's the idea that we're going to go with. Go ahead.
I will add to my bio, because you're shifting towards adults, that one of the books I've written is Adulting Made Easy, Things Someone Should Have Told You About Getting Your Grown-Up Back Together, which really made me think about leadership because I had to write about it and think about what do new adults need to know, and realize that I am also a new adult, even though I've been doing this for a really long time.
And some of that is that adult challenges and responsibilities are constantly changing.
Yeah.
In the same way that being a parent is constantly changes, right? A 5-year-old is not the same as a 10-year-old, is not the same as a 15-year-old. An employee is not the same as a leadership role or management, is not the same as suddenly I work for myself and I do my own thing, is not the same as I am all of a sudden in a position where I have to freelance and I don't exactly run my own business, but I kind of do because I'm jumping from one role to another and one project to another. Adulting is constantly changing. Or even something as simple as like, I was single and now I'm in a relationship. And what, maybe we live together, maybe we don't. And then now we do live together. And now I'm married versus we weren't married before. And all those sorts of things change, or divorced. There's a ton of reasons why adulting responsibilities and roles change.
I like to think of it as on a continuum, because it can go up and down, and we all do. Our roles change, but also the way we view our roles they change as well. In some days, we feel like we're 18 again and in our house and needing somebody in guidance. And what does that look like? So it's very fluid in the way we look at adulting and leadership, I think, these days.
I'm going on record as saying I'm not a huge fan of the word adulting, to be honest. I like emerging adulthood a little bit better. Adulting feels like a verb that we have to do all the time, and some days we're just not up to it. So I like it as a title, but I'm not sure I like it as a word because it means different things to different people.
That's fair. Let's go back to that continuum idea because I want to play with that with specifically our topic today. Before we started recording, we were talking about how leadership landscape is sort of changing and shifting. This is my perspective on that, and feel free to argue with me, feel free to add to it, whatever makes sense. My lens is that what's happening in the larger culture is not exactly that leadership is changing. I think we are finding that leadership is becoming expected. And what is happening is we are shifting away from bossing and into leading because they're not the same thing, in my opinion. And leadership requires a lot more skills than being a boss does. A boss is really your lowest skilled option when it comes to having power over people. And again, let me get my stuff out and then I'll move on. Because the way I see it, a boss wields power over people through fear. They get people to do stuff by making them afraid of failing to do the thing. And a leader gets people to do stuff by encouraging them to do it and helping them do the thing. In fact, in my mind, the job of a leader is to make it as safe as possible for people to do the thing, up to and including failing to do the thing. And that doesn't mean that a leader can't use the boss skills because they absolutely can, but a boss can't use the leader skills because the boss doesn't have the leader skills.
But we can teach a boss to have the leader skills.
We can. I do it. That's what my parent groups do, is that I teach a lot of parents who are mostly bosses to be leaders instead. But am I making sense here? Is this
Absolutely making sense. And I think that you're right. And I like what you said about bossing is driven in fear, and leading is really about opening the space. It's about being open yourself as somebody who is leading to hear things, to learn things, to absorb what's going on in the workplace. That's what I think leading is truly about. It's not just about having the answers. And so I think a boss feels like, I have the answers and this is my thing and this is how we're going to do it. While leading is about working and really looking at what you have in front of you in terms of your team or as a parent, your children. What special gifts do some of them have? What are some of their real, challenges or weaknesses? And really looking at that and sort of sculpting what this it really is, what I would say, in a creative mind, is a work of art in some ways. You really have to be very creative, listening, learning, all of these things that I think that bosses 10 years ago even didn't think about leading that way.
I love that you talk about it being creative because actually, as you were talking, I was thinking about the fact that a leader is, it's almost like a sculpture, right? When you're a really strong leader, you're moving things into different places and trying to find it, the beauty of it. And sometimes it shifts and sometimes it stays in one place. And what your job is to guide it, and it being the team, it being the work, it being the people, into a place where they can all feel like they fit together. And so to me, I would agree. I think that leading is less about telling people what to do and making them worry about what happens if they don't do it, and more showing them what needs to be done to get to an outcome or a goal and helping them figure out how together you can get there. As both of you said, I think really good leaders are able to say, you have the skill and I don't have the skill. So let's work together to make this stronger. And it goes totally against the, kids say it all the time, but that you're not the boss of me, right? And it's true. When you have a really good leadership structure, it's not that somebody's the boss of you. It's somebody is overseeing what you're doing and helping you figure out how to get there.
And I think that's a hard thing. I think it's a hard thing for a leader to understand what leading is truly about and not having to be, first of all, the central focus, the one who makes the final decision. And like we had talked about before this, which was talking about the language and understanding, like, what does the landscape of, you know, leadership look like right now? Well, we are all defining things differently. We are all coming into the workplace with our own preconceived ideas, just like we might think a leader is just a boss. So how do we start to change that narrative? How do we start to see leadership differently, but be able to explain it, you know, in such a way that it's universally understood right now? I think the problem is that we're in some shift in understanding definitions surrounding leadership.
Yeah, because we're still stuck in 1950s leadership definitions, right? Like we're still, I don't underestimate the role World War II plays in leadership. And maybe I overestimate it, but I don't think that I do. I think that we have the echoes and the fallout of, well, a leader is just a guy on a battlefield making his soldiers do the thing, like take the hill, charge the hedgerow, whatever, go to the next trench. And to do that, yeah, you have to terrify them because their other choice is not dying. Like that's what you have to get past, the I'm afraid of dying, in order to get them to do the thing. And that necessitates fear, right? Because if we don't go take that hill, we're going to die anyway. We're just going to die slower. And that is totally a valid way to lead in the middle of a battle. But even lieutenants and drill sergeants and stuff don't lead that way outside of those situations. When they're working with soldiers one-on-one or in a small group, and it's not specifically, I'm training you for the battlefield, it's I'm training you to like rebuild a tank or whatever, they're not leading through fear and terror because there's better ways to do it. It's just all of those better ways fall apart when death is on the line. So we have this misconception of what leadership is because of so many war movies and stuff. And the fact that for so long, men have been the main people in leadership roles. And they brought those war movies and that culture with them because they thought that was what a man is. And it's not the only way to be in charge.
I am really glad that you brought that up. I mean, for a couple of reasons, right? I'm really glad that you brought that up. First of all, because I think there's validity in the like afraid of dying, right? You know, I think we have people in the workplace who will literally say, I'm afraid this is going to kill me. I'm afraid that I'm not going to make it through. I'm afraid I'm not going to. And when you ask them further to say what's going on, they're afraid. They're afraid of what's happening at work. They're afraid to speak up. They're afraid that they're not, if they stop working at a certain time, that it's going to be a problem. If they don't answer an email, it's going to be another problem. So that part, I think, is valid in so many ways. And also, I think one of the things that I'm really appreciative of you bringing up is the men in leadership component of that. And I think it's really important. I mean, you have two women talking to you today who have been in leadership roles in one way or another throughout our careers. And I don't want to stereotype and say it's hard to be a woman in leadership. Right. Because I think there's a lot to break down there, but it's different. It is different to be a woman in leadership because the stereotype is that kind of how men, and I'm doing quotation marks, men lead in a workplace. And it's sort of, you know, these are the steps, these are this. And it's hard as a woman to figure out how to either fit into that role or adjust the way other people see leaders in the workplace. You know, I mean, for all of my own various reasons, and, you know, both Tally and Brendan know this, like I'm neurodivergent. I have very different ways of thinking about things. And they're actually, they benefit me really well in a workplace because I'm an outside the box thinker. They also hinder me in a workplace because I'm an outside the box thinker.
Totally. And I think the same thing. And I think that Amanda and I probably, we haven't talked about each, you know, specific way we lead, but I lead from a place of, like you just said, like you just talked about fear a lot. I have an anxiety disorder. And as somebody who has led with an anxiety disorder and also has lived my life with one, I definitely lead differently as a woman with an anxiety disorder. And I used to do things like hide that anxiety disorder, even though you could always see it. Like if you know me, you absolutely can see when I'm leading with my anxiety. It's not just showing up as a woman, okay, and a woman leader. I think we're showing up as all these different people right now in leadership and what that looks like. So Amanda and I have shown up in different ways as leaders. And I honestly think that part of the reason why my leadership has worked was because I lead with things that I've learned through dealing with severe panic disorder for my whole life.
So how do we want to define leadership?
Ooh.
Ooh, that's good.
I mean, I think we started already, right? We started with it's interesting because I think one of the ways to define the, and this is a teaching thing, right? Like we've all been in classrooms, we've all been educators, this you do the non-example component of things. And so we have the non-example, right? A leader is not a boss. A leader is not someone who inspires through fear. A leader is, you know, so we have the non-examples. But I think part of what we're saying in that is a leader is somebody who shows up intentionally, shows up with deliberation and thoughtfulness about what they want to be, the teams they want to build, right? To Tally's point about the anxiety, right? She and I were talking the other day, and I said something about, you know, those emails you get where it's like, we need to talk. Like my heart drops into my stomach every time. A leader is thoughtful about how they have those conversations, right? A leader is thoughtful about what they talk about in a short period of time with somebody. I was mentioning that I used to have two check-ins with my team individually, right? My individual team members. I used to have two a week if I could. And one was about the work. Let's what, you know, tell me about the project status, tell me how I can help, tell me what's on, you know, what's going well, what's not. And then I'd have another one that was just about what was called like grows and glows, right? What's going well in the workplace? How are you feeling like you can show up in the way you need to? And where do you need support in being able to show up the way you need to? And I think that's a part of leadership is we need to think about what defining showing up looks like. And we haven't, I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we've come up with a good definition of what showing up is. We hear this, you know, show up as your full self. Woo, nobody wants to see that from me. You don't want to see the messy full me. And I don't think it's appropriate to bring all of myself to work. But I guess where is that line is part of the thing that we need to think about as leaders. What's the line where we really want authentic input and people versus what's too much to bring into a workplace? And I grapple with that, I'm just going to say.
I think it's also the word professionalism. So, friend, what you said about professionalism in like the 1950s, and what did that look like versus professionalism now? We are now defining professionalism from four or five different generations in the workplace. That is really, really difficult. Professionalism looks different to everybody now. You know, for a woman, it was wearing, you know, appropriate attire. You know, like there were things that went into professionalism that had nothing to do with your attitude or how you showed up as a person. It really was how you presented yourself. But also understanding that there's so many different components and a lot of different generations defining this. And how do we do this together? That's the question.
Yeah, I want to play with a couple of things in there. One, I want to push back a little bit on what Amanda said, not too much, but
No pushback.
in my opinion, leading through fear is absolutely an option. It just shouldn't be the only option. It shouldn't be the only tool in our toolbox. It should be a tool that we use very infrequently. But there's times when that's what it has to be, because sometimes the answer is too bad, you just got to do it.
Did I say it wasn't? And I mean like sincerely. Did I?
That's why I'm clarifying it. Like
Okay,
I
yeah.
totally think that you have the same view. You said like boss leads through fear. We don't want to do that, right? And I just want to like
That's,
open
I
the door a
appreciate that,
tiny bit of
yeah.
a crack. Yeah, just a little bit of a crack, because sometimes that's what has to happen. But it should be our last option. Like that's the we fall back and we fall back and we fall back option through option through option until we get to too bad, you either do this or you don't, right? And if you don't, consequences.
Well, and there's the parenting equivalent of that, right, too? Like, there are times where you have to say, stop, don't run into the parking lot, and then, like, scare your child into not moving because they're going to get hurt, right? So we are talking about it the same way. I'm so glad you clarified. I'm like, wait, did I say that? I don't think I said that. Like, I'm glad that you jumped in. Thank you.
And the other thing I want to play with, because I'm the one to do this, right, is I'm the white male in the conversation. And when it comes to coming as your whole self, I think a piece of what we're seeing that is challenging, especially for older folks, is professionalism often has meant be as white male as you can possibly be. And if you are not a white male, that's really, really hard to do because that's not who you are. So when it comes to being authentic and bringing yourself to work, I think you should be allowed to be not a white male. If you have a different style of dress, that's okay. If you have a different like fashion sense, that's okay. If you just communicate a little differently, like there's a line, right? Because if culturally you're allowed to be really verbose and really loud and talk forever, that's not white male culture, but also that's not, we don't have time for that in the boardroom, right? And we don't have that as much of a choice. So sometimes you've got to figure out how to communicate in a way that suits the situation. But if we're being forced to be professional in a way that really just means be more white male, and it's not safe for you to not be a white male, that I think is a problem. That's not okay. With again, a couple of like kind of gray areas where if your culture is just loud and very like talkative, and that's not a thing you can do in the office because you're going to be disrupting everyone else's cubicle and taking up people's time when you don't need to. Like, sorry, but that's just, this is the culture of the office, and we kind of have to, there's reasons for that, right? So I think we need to pay attention to how much of the expectations are because of the nature of the work or the nature of the situation that we're in, and how many of the expectations are really power plays by white men who have been in power forever, and this is a way for them to keep it. And I'm not accusing any specific white male of being like, I'm going to keep my power by blah, blah, blah. No, this is systemic, right? You can have an office where there are no white men. It's all black women. And they're still playing the game of trying to be a white man because it's systemic and they don't even recognize necessarily that that's what's happening. Am I making sense, or do I sound like a...
No, I think you are making sense. And I think one of the things that I want to push a little on...
Please do.
...is generationally. That's a generation thing. Like, we're all of a certain generation where that actually is our experience. And we're trying to, you know, change from the inside out. So we're all disruptors in our own kind of way, I would say. And also, we have generations coming into the workplace who are absolutely challenging that. They are absolutely challenging the idea that that's the way it should be. Even the fact that we're talking about cubicles and boardrooms, those may not exist anymore. And we're still expecting them in some places to be cubicles and boardrooms. And I don't, you know, Brendan, it's an example you used, but I think it's a really good way to think about the fact that we have generations, you know, and I will be the first to say I have kids of the next generation. Actually, I have kids of like all generations, 27, 21, 13. Like I'm just like, they're all going to the workplace from different perspectives, right? But their expectations of what a workplace looks like and how they can show up and how they don't have to show up and what they can say to their supervisor or their manager is so different than mine. And I've been corrected by my oldest more than a few times. And I've been corrected by my employees, the people I supervise more than a few times in ways that I think are really helpful to my own growth and learning about what this generation values and respects and expects.
There are two big things that stand out to me, especially when we're talking about this. One is expectations in the workplace, and the other is trust. We haven't used the word trust yet. And what we're seeing, I think, all over the place is that people are not trusting one another in the workplace. And that is causing such a divide. So we're not even able to have these conversations because all of a sudden somebody, you know, you have a Gen X and a Gen Z in the room together, and they're speaking totally different languages to each other, and then they're not feeling heard. So then what does that do? That produces this culture of distrust in the workplace because they're not hearing each other and they're not communicating the same way. And then the expectations become sort of thrown out the window. So what do we do with that? Like, that's my question.
I don't have a great answer, but let me play with a couple of things. One, I want to add to what I said because it's not just white men. I shouldn't just say it that way. I should say neurotypical white men.
Oh, yep.
That's a critical component here that I don't want to ignore. And I think that that plays a role in what we're talking about, right? Because are things changing? Yeah. But what industries are we in? Like mental health, and you're both women, and like I'm telling you, older white men, someone comes up to them and is like, "That's not how you talk to me. You're not allowed." They're like, "No, do you understand how power works? Because I can fire you now if I want to. Like, I
Bully.
don't really care how you want to talk to me. I'll do what I want to do because I've put 30, 40 years into my career and now I have the power to do what I want to do." Like, it's not always realistic that you can go up to your boss and say, "It's unacceptable," or "I don't like that you said," or whatever. There's plenty of bosses out there, bosses, I'm using that word on purpose, who are just going to be like, "That's whatever." Right. And they might not say anything. They might not push back on you. You might just find that you're suddenly not getting promoted, or you're not getting opportunities that you want other people around you are getting. Because not everybody is down with that. And until we don't have 70-year-olds in the White House, I think that we're probably going to stay there, assuming those 70-year-olds don't turn to 80-year-olds. Until we have boomers who are not in charge of the halls of power, and we have at least Gen Xers in charge of the halls of power, it's going to take a while. Like, this kind of change is slow to occur. It's like turning a battleship.
And I want to play with something you said around the neurotypical component of things, right? And we are all in these industries. We're all here because, one way or another, the way we think our mental wellness has impacted how we show up in workplaces. And here the three of us are talking, and I'm self-employed right now. I'm a consultant. Brendan, you're a coach and you do that on your own. Tally, you're a consultant, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say some of that is because the way my neurodivergence has shown up in workplaces has made it really difficult. And I have, I'm not, there's no offense to any of the workplaces I've worked at. I have learned wonderful things, worked with amazing people, and done such good things, and probably would have stayed there forever if I didn't realize things about myself that I needed to change, right? And I think that's the important piece is, if workplaces don't change in ways that aren't just accommodating to different generations, but also accommodating to different minds and different needs, people like us step out of workplaces and start our own things, which is great. And also, what does that do to workplaces and that continuation of culture? The other thing I wanted to mention as you were talking about, I was thinking, we also have this flip too, right? Where there are generations who are like, so for example, Gen X, who's now their leader is a Gen Z, and they're trying to figure out how to do that, right? It's hard. I know so many people are like, my boss is like 15 years younger than me. And they won't say the person in leadership above me is 15 years younger than me. They say my boss. And that's an interesting thing to me.
Very much so. I mean, I think that that's really important as well, is that we now have bosses that are younger. But I like what you said, Amanda, as well, is that workplaces don't cater to a changing mind. They would like to be more uniform to a detriment. I mean, I think we all have probably our own stories of being in the workplace and how our own pasts and what's going on in our bodies have affected the way we have shown up at work, but also the way we've been treated at work or the way we have been silenced at work. I think that's another thing. Like when you say, can you show up as who you are? For years in leadership, I didn't feel, because of my own insecurities of having a mental health problem, that I could show up as a leader. The thing in my head saying, you can't do this. And then other people saying, oh, I don't think she can do this because she's showing up this way. I think it's really like important that we do know ourselves, that we are looking at who we are as leaders, how we can perform in the workplace, but also like, is the workplace shifting for us? Are we trying to like fit a round peg into a square? You know, is that what we're doing? I think people right now are staying in workplaces that are not benefiting them, and also that they're not benefiting the workplace because they just have a job. And that's really also a big challenge.
I want to play with the can I be a leader with anxiety
yes.
stuff that you've alluded to a few times.
Please.
One of the challenges that is happening with leadership is that we're moving towards the idea of being more authentic. And part of being authentic is accepting who we are and how we work. Podcasts like this hopefully are helping with that. Talking about mental health and talking about neurodiversity and letting people go, oh yeah, I just have ADHD and that's fine. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
I became a much better leader. I've always been a pretty good leader. I always, even when I didn't want to be a leader, I just end up leading despite only being 5'5". Like, I'm still a guy because the height matters for leadership. I still end up there, right? And
I'm
so,
5'2".
Yeah, it's a thing.
I'm 5'9", so I've always been.
That's a good height for leadership. At least with men, it matters. So one of the things that's happened for me is I've become a much better leader when I just accepted my ADHD, when I got to the point where I was like, yeah, I'm just going to screw some stuff up and it's not the end of the world. I'll fix it. Like, I might inconvenience people on occasion. I'll feel bad about that, but I'll fix it and we'll move on. When I got there, it really helped me in terms of being able to lead, in terms of being able to make decisions and do things and feel like I belonged. Some of that also coincided with me working for myself. So that I'm not going to pretend that that doesn't play a role, because some of what is challenging is when the default assumption is that you're neurotypical and you're not, you can feel like a square peg in a round hole. And you're like, I don't know how to do what you want me to do because I don't operate the way you think that I operate. But if we can go, I operate like this and it still works, it's just going to be a little different. And as long as you can cooperate with me, we'll be fine. We're going to be better off. And I think younger generations are getting that message sooner. And that might be a piece of why we have Gen Z in leadership positions over Gen X. And that circles me back to my boss is 15 years younger than me.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of things going on there, right? One is you might have a younger person leading an older person who's like, I don't know how to do that. So I'm just going to default to boss. I'm going to use the least skilled option because it's the only one I know how to do, right? The other stuff, I don't know. Maybe they don't respond well to my more Gen Z leadership style. So when I try to connect and bond and motivate and all that stuff, the Gen Xer's like, huh? No. Or it could be that the Gen Xer is really uncomfortable with having someone in a leadership position who is younger than them. And so they keep saying boss because there's some piece of them that's like, the only way I would listen to someone who's 15 years younger than me is if I was afraid of them. Because if I'm not afraid of them, I don't know why I would listen to them. They're 15 years younger than me, which is their own bias. And that might also be why the Gen Z person has to be a boss, because the Gen Xer is making them. They're like, no, I'm not scared of you. So I'm not going to do what you said. Like, I'm going to do my own thing because I've been doing this longer than you or whatever.
But I think sometimes they're not a boss, right? And I think that's the important part.
I'm agreeing with you, yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. And I think one of the things that you know, using the phrase my boss does is it diminishes power, right? And it diminishes power just by using that phrase. And it tries to equalize things in ways that it doesn't need to be equalized or shouldn't be equalized or
I push back on that a little bit? Because I think I have a different lens. I think it accentuates power. It highlights power. It diminishes status.
Yes. And I think that's the word that I wish I'd used, right? And it's interesting, as we're doing this, I think what we are doing is demonstrating intentional leadership where we can push back on each other's ideas. Mm-hmm. We can push back on each other's language. We can have these conversations and we're going to walk away okay. Right. And I
right.
think that that's really important.
Yeah, totally.
And I just want to name it, right? I want to name it. And that's because that's the neurodivergent mind in me. I want to like be explicit in saying, this is what I'm seeing here. I will say that when I just gave up all the artifice of pretending to be neurotypical or like masking or camouflaging, which got in the way of me being a really productive human because I was just constantly making myself, listeners can't see me, but I'm like all clenched up having this, you know, and I was all sort of tightened up and,
but so smaller.
I think more anxious, actually. Like, I think it made me more anxious. But one of the things that happened is I became a really good lateral leader and not just top-down leader, right? So any place I've worked, I'm probably the one person who knows the neurodivergences of many, many people who won't disclose it to anybody else. There's issues with that. And there have been plenty of times where I've said, I really hope you will go to HR and tell them so you can, you know, tell them what you need to be productive, not ask for an accommodation, but tell them what you need to be productive. But it has given people a place where they feel comfortable sharing who they are. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of leading that way. And I use the word leading intentionally there because it's an intentional decision on my part of how much I disclose about myself in order to make sure that people feel like they are not alone in a workplace.
Yeah.
Or a parenting webinar or a teacher's room, right? Like wherever that is. Those are the places where I want people to feel like I understand some of the things that they think they need to hide.
But I think the three of us show up very intentionally. We show up who we are, we say what we mean. And I think one of the problems in the workplace is you're not taught that. You're not taught to show up intentionally. You don't know how to like look at yourself and actually evaluate what's going on and really learn how to, you know, look at how you've behaved in, you know, a certain setting and shift that. I think that's one of the things, like you're not taught these things. And we're in a society right now where things are going really quickly, where people are having to adapt and change all the time. I think we have to sort of give ourselves a little bit of grace here and understanding that we are human beings and that we do all show up in different settings, but that people that have not been taught how to lead right now. Like, I mean, that's really what I'm hearing. Even the three of us have different ways of talking and leading. Yeah. I think part of this is understanding our own internal biases, what Brendan said. What do we bring to the workplace? Like, whether it's somebody and we have a boss who's a Gen Z, are we like, oh my God, seriously, do I have to take this person seriously? Well, yeah, you do. If you want to keep the job. You kind of have to do that. I think that part of this is about understanding and questioning and also really hearing our own internal monologues that come along with the workplace, because we all have.
And just being mindful of time, do you have any ending essentials that you'd like to share with our audience?
I'm going to piggyback on something that Tally said is one of the essentials I want to share. She said something about we say what we mean. And I really want to narrow in on that and say, I absolutely say what I mean and try to mean what I say. And in workplaces, I think we need to give people the presumption of good intent and think that what they say is what they mean. And if they don't mean what they say, we need to question that. And so I think the essential I would leave people with is if you do not understand the subtext of something at work, now's the time to start asking those questions.
I totally agree, Amanda. I think it's about asking questions to understand. I don't think we need to ask questions so to elevate anybody in leadership. I think it's about understanding that we're all in different spaces as we're trying to navigate through this new landscape of leadership and the work environment, because a lot of us are still doing hybrid. We're doing, you know, full-time, you know, at home work. We need to really understand that this is a shifting culture. What are we doing to adapt to that? And that means that everyone in each workplace plays a part of this. Every single one of us, no matter if you are a leader or you're a frontline worker, we have to come together on some of this because it's moving quickly.
Hey, you're still here. Nice. Thanks for staying focused all the way through. If you have any thoughts or questions about today's episode,
feel free to email me at brendan@adhdessentials.com. And don't forget to check out the website, adhdessentials.com, and visit our Facebook community. I'm looking forward to talking to you again next week. In the meantime, keep focusing on improvement over perfection. 10% better is all you need.